ברוכים הנמצאים. פרשת לך לך. זה סוגיה אברהם אבינו, עליו השלום. According to הרמב״ם, אברהם אבינו is the greatest man that ever lived. משה רבנו is the greatest prophet. But אברהם אבינו is the greatest philosopher, the founder of the monotheism in his time. Baal Chesed, Mechaber Sefarim, Sefer Yesira. So I in preparing for the Shi'ur, I said I want to talk a little about Avraham Avinu, but not from Pirashat Lech Lecha. I wanted to look for some other sources to see if we can get a proper understanding of who this, what the Navi calls Adam Gadol Ba'anakim, the great giant. So I was tipped off that I should look in Tehillim. That's not where I my first place to look, because Tehillim I know is written by David HaMelech. If I want to get a bio of David, I look at Tehillim. I always understood that the 150 chapters of the Tehillim are actually recollections of David HaMelech, the different episodes that he went through, and he writes a short essay on it, and he talks about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved him. I then came to understand that the Tehillim actually has a few authors. It's the Gemara and Baba Batra. The Gemara Baba Batra Daf Ted Vav says David katav Sefer Tehillim al yede asara zekenim. So there was asara zekenim. There were ten elders. So it was a group effort. Okay, that's a hadush in itself. And they list the ten. So then the Gemara says, well, how come you didn't count one of the authors, a fellow by the name of Etana Ezrahi? The Gemara says, V'lichshuv Etana Ezrahi. So I said, well, I didn't know he was an author. I don't know who he is even. I opened up the Tehillim book, and at the end of the Tehillim in Perek Petit, Perek 89, I see there's a chapter. Maskil le'etana Ezrahi. Shtabach Shemo. I don't know what maskil is. We'll see what that is. That's a very interesting opening to a Tehillim. I'm used to Zmor le'David, Shir la'ma'alot, Shir ha'ma'alot, le'David. This will be opens up with an interesting word. Maskil. And the author is none other than Etana Ezrahi. Now today in the modern world, you have guys that are called Etan. I thought I knew the Bible. If you were to ask me last week, you know, who is Etana Ezrahi? I've never heard of him. Is he a Navi? Is he a scholar? What is that? I don't know. I wouldn't even know that he's in the Tehillim book. But he, not only is he in the Tehillim book, but he wrote a chapter. Very important man to know. Maskil Etana Ezrahi, Etan from the east. I guess he lived in the east. Ezrahi, like from Mizrahi. Gemara Baba Batra. Hold on to your seats, Rabotai. Gemara says, Amar Rav, Etana Ezrahi, Zehu Avraham. So Avraham Abinu had a nickname. Abraham Abinu, a.k.a. Rashi Tevot, also known as Etana Ezrahi. So we found the gold here now. That means there's a chapter in Tehillim that was penned by Avraham Abinu, alayhi v'shalom. So if we're interested in learning about Avraham Abinu, we could learn about it from his own words. You can't get a better point, which means in Parashat Lech Lecha, he didn't write it. Parashat Lech Lecha is what's written about Avraham. Perek Petit in Tehillim is what Avraham writes about himself. That's his diary. So it's a very, if anybody's interested in getting the the essence of Avraham, the secret of Avraham Avinu is in Petet. I opened up to Ibn Ezra, to his commentary on Tehillim. I was bothered about the maskil. What's the maskil? So he says, whenever you see a maskil, maskil comes from the pasuk, askilecha ve'orecha. I will enlighten you and instruct you. So anytime there was a chapter in Tehillim with an enlightenment, with a, you know, a hidush, the author would begin with maskil to give you a tip. Rabotai, there's a secret over here. Maskil. Askilecha ve'orecha. I'm going to enlighten you and I'm going to instruct you. So it's incumbent upon us tonight, Be'ezrat Hashem, not to read the whole chapter. I didn't come to read the whole chapter. But what I came is to try to figure out, where's the maskil over here? What's the maskil in the chapter? So I start. The truth is, the first pasuk, I wasn't shocked. It made sense to me. Hasde Adonai olam ashira, ledor vador odia emunaticha befi. Avraham Avinu says, I spent my life in spreading emuna. Ledor vador, generation after generation. Ledor vador odia emunaticha befi. I publicized the emuna that was in my mouth. Which, by the way, I would be shocked if he didn't mention that first. That's one of Avraham's great accomplishments. In this week's parasha, Avraham is called Avraham Ivri. Not only because he was Avraham the Hebrew. Ivri, the Midrash writes, Milashon Ivir, that Avraham Avinu stood on one side of the philosophical argument, and everybody else stood on the other side. He's Ivri. He believed in one God, and everybody else believed in whatever they believed in. And he's nicknamed Etan, because Etan means the one that's strong, the one that's steadfast. He's Etan, he's unmovable. He's bedrock. No matter what they were going to claim against him, Abraham is Etan. You can't shake his belief. It's impenetrable. And he's Ivri. So I'm not shocked when Abraham, you know, the first pasuk he writes about himself, I spent my life promoting Emunah. I quote you the Gemara in Baba Batra on the next page. Tet Zayin Amud Bet, or Tet Vav Amud Bet. In the name of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Tet Zayin. Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai Omer. That's what Hashbi said. Even Tova Haita Teluya B'Tzavaro Shel Avraham Avinu. Shabbach Shemot. Avraham Avinu used to wear a Evin Tova around his neck. He used to wear a pearl around his neck, the Gemara says. Shekol chole haro'e oto. Anybody that was sick, that looked at it, miyad mitrapeh, immediately got healed. Ubesha'a sheneftar Avraham Avinu min ha'olam, and when Avraham Avinu passed away, tele'aha kadosh baruch hu begalgal hama. God took the pearl and he put it in the sun. What does this Gemara mean? I mean, I never saw a picture of Avraham Avinu. But I wouldn't picture him wearing a pearl necklace. I mean, today you have men, they do a lot of funny things, but Avraham Avinu, Alav Shalom, to wear a... And what does it mean that whoever looked at the pearl became healed? Is there such a thing as a medicinal pearl? And what does it mean that when he passed away, they put it in the sun? Today you looked at the sun, you didn't see any pearls glistening from the sun. In order to understand this Gemara, I'll refer you to what Rabbeinu Bahya writes on his Perush in the Torah, Hakdama LeParashat Yitro. It's an incredible Rabbeinu Bahya. You should look at it inside. There he talks about what Shlomo talked about, Lashon Marpeh. There's certain people that they have a mouth, an ability to communicate, and their communication skills are healing. Shlomo talks about marpeh lashon, lashon marpeh. You can cure a person by just talking to him. On a simple interpretation, you know, God forbid if a person is depressed, you go visit him, you talk with him. You can talk him out of a depression. That's the chokhmah of therapy. What does the therapist do? You're able to talk it out. All of a sudden, you get all the knots out of your head. That's marpeh lashon. So the Ben Bakya says, but the Lashon not only can cure a person physically, But there's people that have spiritual ailments. The neshama is sick. They have spiritual maladies. The neshama is malnutritioned. It's possible somebody can come along and give a good talk, and it can revive a person spiritually. It can blow life into his neshama. So he writes, the one that had the greatest marpeh lashon was Avraham Avinu. There was no one greater that gave sermons and lectures and conferences like Avraham Avinu. People would come to Avraham, they had no belief. And by the time they left the shi'ur, marpeh lashon, his lashon was able to revive the, not physically, but spiritually. He would talk to them emunah. So the Benu Bahya writes, Eben Tova Haita Teluya Betzavaro Shel Avraham Avinu. There was an Eben Tova that was hanging from his neck. You know what the Eben Tova was? His voice box. The voice box of Avraham was like an Eben Tova, that anybody that was sick, anybody that was spiritually sick, anybody that soul was anemic, would look at the voice box or hear the voice box of Avraham. Miyad Mitrapeh. Immediately, Abraham's voice, his talk, his speech, lashon marpeh, it would cure anybody. Now, what was the theme of his talks? The Benu Bahya writes this. What was his theme? You know, if you have one shot, you can talk to a group of people who don't believe in God. What are you going to tell them to get them believe in that there's a creator? Now, he didn't preach Judaism. There wasn't Judaism then. Judaism doesn't come until Moshe. He preached monotheism. He preached a creator. How would you do it? The main theme that Rabbeinu Bahya says that Avraham Avinu employed was the sun. Because in those days there was a lot of sun worshippers. So Avraham Avinu would say, if the sun is God, why then does it set every night in the west? That means it disappears. If it's a god, it should stay bright the whole day. That means somebody is obviously putting the sun down. Not only that, he would say, how does the sun follow a perfect pattern? It rises at a certain time every day, which is predictable. And it sets at a certain time of day, which is also predictable. And it follows a certain path. Anything that has order must have somebody that's managing. That's a klal. Things that are helter-skelter, there's no manager. But things that are in a system, there's a seder. I mean, somebody must have organized it. So he would say, who organizes the flight pattern of the sun? You know, if you go to the train station every morning, the train comes into the station 7:06. Every morning 7:06. Imagine somebody comes along and says, "Wow, that's amazing, this train just comes in every morning, just like that." There's no such thing when just like this. There's 10,000 people working in the transit trying to make sure the train comes in on time. Nothing for nothing. So Avraham Avinu would use the sun as his theme. It has a pattern. Hashamayim mesaperim kevod el. The sky speaks of a creator. Umasiya adam magid arakiya. That means the sun, the galaxies, the stars, the planets, they speak of a creator. This was Avraham's theme. So when Avraham Avinu passed away, which is, by the way, probably why they called him Etana Ezrahi, Etan from the east, because the sun rises in the east. And therefore, Etan, the one that always would talk about the Ezrahi, he would talk about the sun in the east. That was his theme. When he passed away, God took that pearl, which means God took those talking points, and he put it in the sun. He said, if anybody wants to hear the speech of Avraham Avinu now, look at the sun. Which means the derashah of Avraham Avinu now was, it couldn't have been verbalized. His lashon wasn't there anymore. He passed away. God took that lashon and put it in the sun. Anybody want to hear Avraham Avinu's speech? Look at the sun, you'll hear the speech. You'll learn from the sun. There's a very interesting Ramban in this week's parasha as well. To talk about the emunah of Avraham Avinu, it wasn't regular emunah.
The
Benu Bahya. Benu Bahya, Hagdama le parashat Yitro. Ayin Sham. So, there's a Ramban in this week. The Ramban, it says when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Avraham Avinu and says, look at the stars, you're going to have children that are going to be as multiple as the stars. And he gives them a beautiful blessing. So the Pasuk writes, Ve'emin Bashem. He believed it. The Gemara, the Torah says, Ve'emin Bashem, Ve'yachsheveh lo Hashem Tzedakah. And it was considered a zechut that he believed in Hashem. The Ramban says, what's the zechut that he believed? This is Avraham Avinu that jumped into a fire for God. This is Avraham Avinu that when God told him to slaughter his son, he didn't hesitate. And now that God promises him something good, that he believed in it, of course, why shouldn't he believe in it? He did much greater than this. That's not Avraham's great accomplishment, Ve'emin Bashem. He already believed God when it came to dire predictions. So to believe in God, that God tells him everything's going to be great, Ve'emin Bashem, the Ramban says, what's the big... Says the Hatam Sofer. This Pasuk of Ve'emin is not only a noun, Ve'emin. It's a verb. But it's not only a verb, it's a verb that applies to others, which means Avram's emunah was so great, the he'emin, he was able to transfer it to the future generations. That means when Moshe Rabbeinu goes to the burning bush, to the snare, and he tells, and God tells Moshe, go tell the people where they're leaving Egypt. Moshe Rabbeinu answers, Ve'em lo ya'aminu. They're not going to believe me. God says, what are you talking about? The Jewish people are ma'aminin, b'nei ma'aminin. They're believers, the children of believers. So the Gemara says, how do we know the Jewish people are the children of believers? Shene'emar ve'emin b'Hashem. That means Avraham Avinu, when he believed in Hashem, that emunah becomes genetic. It becomes something that's transferable. It's like blue eyes, brown hair. It becomes part of the DNA of Klal Yisrael. Ve'emin b'Hashem. And that's what it means in the Pasuk. Ledor vador agid emunat chabefi. The emunah that I had was transferable. It was able to become part of the genome of Klal Yisrael. Avraham Avinu spoke emunah. Now the next pasuk in that tehillim, I'm not shocked either. David HaMelech's next great accomplishment. Ki amarti olam chesed yibaneh. I believed in another principle. Emunah is one thing. I also believed in the principle of chesed. I believe that the world stands on certain fundamentals. And one of the fundamentals is chesed. And Avraham Avinu would become the human embodiment of chesed, as we know. And the Torah tells us all the stories of Avraham Avinu's gimlut hasadim, which the prophet Micha comes along and says, chesed l'Avraham. That's it, chesed is Avraham. Avraham and chesed are synonymous. Avraham has the copyright on chesed. Avraham's chesed is boundless. So those are the two things of Avraham. He's a man of emunah, and he's a man of chesed, and they're written back to back. If I'm writing the bio of Avraham Avinu, those are the first two things I would probably write also. Emunah, chesed. I asked myself, is there a connection between the two? Or are these just two traits that I've known? I'll tell you why I thought that there might be a connection. Because when I read the pasuk, it says, "Ledor vador odi emunat echa befi, emunah ki amarti." And when I saw the word ki is because. Now you don't start a pasuk with because. Now that's the first rule in grammar. In here, David HaMelech or Avraham Avinu, ki amarti olam chesed yibaneh, as if there's a connection. He's continuing his thought. I spoke emunah because I had chesed. As if there's a connection. He didn't start a new topic. It's key. Key is a continuation. So I said, well, obviously, if we're going to read the chapter properly, Avraham is trying to tell us that there's a connection between emunah and chesed. And I found the connection. Although I don't think that's the maskil yet. What I'm going to tell you now is not the maskil. I think it's just easy. This is anybody can figure this out. The maskil is going to take some work. It says in the pasuk, Avraham Avinu opened up the first hotel chain. Before Marriott, before Hilton. The hotel chain was called Eshel. Eshel is Rashi Tevot. It's an acronym. Achila, Shetiya, Lina. Eating, drinking, lodging. So you went to Avraham Avinu's hotel. You can eat all you want. You drink all you want. And free lodging. The only thing they didn't have in Avraham Avinu's hotel was a bill. You didn't get a bill. When you checked in, you didn't have to give a credit card for incidentals. When you came to Avraham Avinu's hotel, call a Baruch, all you can eat. Not for $9.99. All you can eat for all you can eat. All you can drink, and stay as long as you want. No points, no money, no nothing. You stay for free. However, if you read the fine print, in the clause on the bottom, you know, clause 4AA111C, the clause on the bottom, to stay in the hotel, you have to attend one shiur of Avraham Avinu. So basically it was the first timeshare. You know, you had to go, but you had to go to the meeting. You had to go to one of these meetings. Now, he wasn't selling you, a condominium in Honolulu. You had to go to one shiur. So Avraham Avinu was a genius. He understood, how am I going to get the people to fix their souls? If I put up a big sign, free classes. Who's coming to a free class? Who cares about a free class? But if you put up a sign, free food, I'll do them a chesed physically, and that'll be the bait. I'll bait them in with that, which is okay. The chesed physically is great. Avraham Avinu loves to do chesed physically. It wasn't that as if it was ulterior motive. He wants to do the chesed physically. But he said, why stop physically? Why not continue the chesed? So by the time you came out of Avraham Avinu's hotel, you were physically satiated and you were spiritually resuscitated. So it's a full service. You got everything. One chesed led to another chesed. He used his chesed operation to promote emunah. It's a 1-2 punch. I mean, it's a genius idea. We had a guy in our community. They called him Mr. Dayan, Nuri Dayan. If you go to the bookstore, they just wrote a book. Oscar just wrote a book about him. Nuri Dayan. He was a very, very special man. He founded the congregation called Ahayezer on Ocean Parkway and Avenue S on the corner. He was the founding president. Very, very special man. He instituted and invented a novel idea. He came to the conclusion, he said, listen, the men are off on Sundays. We got to get them to shul. So this is like 50, 60 years ago. He announced one Shabbat, Rabotai, tomorrow morning after the 8 o'clock minyan, there's going to be a free breakfast. He himself went on Sunday morning to the bagel store at 6 a.m. He bought 36 bagels. And he set the table up, some lox, some cream cheese. He says, I heard him say it many times, do not underestimate the power of a bagel, especially if it's free. Now all of a sudden, guys who never came to shul. And he says, guys who could afford to buy a bagel. But it's just psychological. The free food. They came. Now once he was sitting at the table, he gave out Tehillim books. Rabbi, two Tehillim. Read. Kaddish. Before you knew it, they came out physically satisfied. And so, to the credit of Mr. Dayan, I'm not taking away his credit, but it's an old trick. It's already from the playbook of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was doing that 3,000 years ago. Avraham Avinu's Eshel, his Eshel hotel, had an ulterior motive. Bring the customers in, feed them. And I don't like to say ulterior motive because Avraham was interested in the physical chesed as well. It's not like it was this to get to that. It was this for this. He wanted to do physical chesed as well, but he wanted to do complete chesed. He didn't want to, why stop short? Why just satisfy them physically when you could? So by the time you came out, you know, one or two talks of Avraham, all of a sudden it becomes Etan Nefesh Asher Atzu B'Haran. They become his students. And that's how he grew his empire from city to city, from place to place. So I think that's the interpretation of the Pesukim over here. Ki amarti olam chesed yibaneh. He says, ledor vador odia emunatecha. I spread emunah. And how did I spread emunah? Ki amarti olam chesed yibaneh. I did chesed. I used chesed as the lure, as the attraction. So it's a good combo. It's a good combo. Feed them and they will come. And once they come, and we know what the Midrash says. They would sit down, Avraham Avinu would say, okay, Rabotai, Hakarat Atov, give thanks. Nevarech l'Avraham she'achem l'mishelo. Nevarech l'Avraham. No, Nevarech l'Elokeinu. Elokeinu is Elokeinu. Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, and he started making them like a dash of Pesach. And before you know it, they were all ma'amini. He started with the son, and Etana Ezrachi, and so on and so on. That's the simple interpretation of the two items. But that's not the maskil. Avraham Avinu wasn't waving a red flag. Oh, Rabotai, don't. There's a depth here. That's not the depth. It's Nuri Dayan figured it out. I mean, he can figure this out. It's possible to figure it out. But there's something deep, and this is what I came to tell you tonight, boys. It's a secret. It's a secret of life. How am I going to explain this to you? We'll start like this. It's the subject of objectivity. You know what it means to be objective? Objective means to go into something where your mind is blank and doesn't have any, you know, opinion either way, and then to look at information objectively and come out with a conclusion. To have an objective opinion. A judge who's judging a case against one of our members, and one of our members goes to the judge before the case and says, "Can I speak to your honor in the chambers?" Of course, Baruch Abba. And he takes out a gold watch from his pocket and he tells him, "Listen, my dear judge, your honor, this is for you, but nothing to do with the case. It's just because you're a good guy and I have no expectation. Meaning, I don't want this to taint you. I don't want this to affect you. Judge it like you see it, but I want the judge to have this." By the way, it's $10,000, the watch also. But it doesn't matter. That's neither here or there. The watch is for the judge. And by the way, if you say in the case I'm guilty, no problem, I accept. The judge takes the watch, puts it in his pocket. Rabotai, is it possible for that judge to be objective?
No.
Now, even though on a conscious level he'll say, "Oh, it doesn't affect me," but on a subconscious level, at least, he's tainted. There's no way, as long as that gold watch is in his pocket, there is no way he can see straight. And that's what the Torah means. Ki hashohad ya'avir. Shohad blinds. Period.
So Pasuk mentioned the matter of the employee in the coat pocket.
But he knows about it. He knows about it. He knows. He took the watch.
Even the case where he...
You're right. That's the Gemara and Ketubot. We know that. I'm talking about a straight out bribe, not a lamdanut bribe. Hey, you took the bribe. He took it. I see it. That does nas. He put it on his hand. That's it. He's over. This judge cannot see objective. That's the concept of a bribe. This is very, 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 very important because, although we're not judges, but we are bribed. We are bribed. And as long as we're bribed, and I'll tell you what we're bribed by, we're not going to be able to see the truth objectively. There was a book that was written on evolution. Last year we talked about evolution a lot. I know you guys are in college, they probably give credence to that... to that theory. So the evolutionists, they say like this. Their theory is that, listen, man evolved over, 100 billion years, give or take. And listen, as man needed certain things, so he adapted. Adaptation is always based on a need. Therefore, they say, at a certain time during the process, evolution realized that man needs hands. So evolution adapted and gave a person hands. But yes, who's evolution? Who is this guy? No, it's nobody. It's just, that's what it's called. Also, some imaginary, invisible word called evolution. Is evolution have a brain? No, it doesn't have a brain. It's a word. Evolution is a word. So how could a word know something? Because that's the women. Don't you believe in science? Okay, so you're intimidating me, so I back off. Okay, evolution knew something. I don't have a... it's like saying the desk knew, and therefore it adapted. So I guess, according to that theory, things adapt on their own. So if I would sit here and be thirsty, if I would sit long enough, eventually a lemonade would surface. Without anybody doing anything, because things just adapt according to what the need is. This is what they say. And they say with a straight face. That's the best part of it. If they weren't so convincing with the straight face, I would put them and say, what's your mother's name? How could you believe in such a thing? It's delusional. I've said many times that Darwin had a tremendous imagination. And I'm not a mikubal, but I do believe he did come back in as the Gilgul of Walt Disney. Walt Disney was the Gilgul of Charles Darwin. He used Darwin's imagination to make Disney World, to make all these fantasy places over there. Because it's so beyond the pale of logic. But fine. So then they say, well, listen, and then evolution realized you need to have a nose to smell. Boom, a nose came. You need to hear. So all these things that we have, let's say, on our face, the senses, are all products of a need that evolution dealt with. We should vote for evolution for president. You know, evolution to run the country. I mean, they provide all, anytime there's a need, boom! And they execute flawlessly. Evolution is incredible. It's able to find out what the need is and then solve it. They also talk that, well, evolution created cravings. You have a craving to eat when you're hungry. Very important. Because if you didn't have that craving and you didn't know that you were hungry, you would never eat. And then you'd starve to death. More importantly, you have a craving to drink. Because drinking is more important than eating. So that's a need of evolution. Because it must have been for millions of years, people were malnutrition, but they didn't know it because they didn't have a craving to eat. So people were dying and dying and dying and dying and dying. And all of a sudden everyone said, hey, we got a problem here. Well, so we have to change the computer system a little and now create a craving. And also people start to live. That's what they believe. The survival of the fittest. The most fit continued, and the ones that, and evolution keeps on, you know, making a new model. They talk about emotions. Evolution figured out that fear is important. So you can keep away from danger. Boom, so they created fear. Before evolution, people were just walking into lions' dens. They weren't scared. And the lion ate them up. And now all of a sudden, people are getting eaten by lions all day long. Evolution came along and said, hey, we got to fix this. So here's a problem. We got to make sure that a person, when he sees a lion, knows that that's scary and you got to get fear and run the other way. Boom! Created fear. They created love. Because a person's to get married. It's to perpetuate. All this stuff is all the douche of evolution. Genius. Darwin writes, Mashem, or Darwin writes in one of his books. I'm not offending anybody. Darwin writes in one of his books, not Origin of the Species, another one of the, you know, his works. I can't believe he writes it. It's a hoda'a ala emet, partial. It's hoda'a b'miksat. Modib b'miksat. He writes, fact. And it's not only him. Many, many evolutionists agree with this. Human beings not only were born with a sense of necessity to eat, to drink, to fear, to love, etc. But most human beings are born innately with a sense that there's a God. So he writes. He says, it's just one of those. You're born with it. Most people have a natural a tendency to believe that there's a supernatural being above them, that there's some, you know, something higher than them. If you ever see them on the plane when there's turbulence, or you see everybody cross their fingers like this. Okay? People that they don't even know what God is. Those on the, they start mumbling. They're saying words. Who are they talking to? That's a problem for Darwin. Because Darwin's whole shita is there's only a situation that results in a need. Now, the only way to answer that, if everybody believes in God naturally, so there must be a need for that. So we explain that, of course. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that human beings need emunah. Emunah is essential for their existence. So therefore, God created a certain proneness to believe that there's a God. But that'll blow Darwin out of the water. So what does Darwin have to say? Now, that feeling, it's a false positive. Which means it's not really what you're feeling. The Y's got crossed up over there. So just disregard that. Oh, which means everything else is emet. But this is like a polygraph that sometimes gives a false reading. So it's really not a craving for God. It's something else you're feeling, but you're interpreting. Well, he has to give a whole pinpool because he has to get out of it. He's got to get out of it. There's been articles written by many evolutionists trying to deal with that conundrum of how do you deal with this natural tendency to believe in a creator. It's a problem for them. We don't have a problem. We say, God created the world, and God knows exactly you need to eat, so he makes you hungry. He needs to drink, he makes you thirsty. And you need to believe in him, so he wired you that naturally. And now, not only are there internal systems that bring you to that, externally as well. The world speaks of the creation of God. The world speaks of Shammai Misapani Gudel. So whether you see it on an external standard or an internal standard, it's not so difficult to find God. However, many people struggle with it. Many people struggle coming to this truth for a simple reason. They're bribed. They are bribed. And once you're bribed, you won't see the truth. What are they bribed with? Well, there's a Mishnah, Pirkei Avot. It's a famous Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Hakina'a v'ata'ava v'kavod motzin et ha'adam min ha'olam. There are three traits that the Mishnah holds. These are the killer traits. These are the three killer traits. Jealousy, ta'ava, lust, kavod, ego. If you possess any of these traits, called shekin, all three, these traits will remove you from the world. I don't know what that means, remove me from the world. That's vague. I open up Maimonides' Pirush to the Mishnah to see, what does that mean? Motzi et adam min ha'amunah? Rambam's language. Sha'al yedeh midot elu ha'adam yafsid et emunat ha'Torah. Rambam, in those words of a Rishon over there, is giving us a very important lesson. When a person is plagued by these midot, you won't come to the emunah of the Torah for the simple reason. If a person, let's say, has a certain desire, he has a desire for whatever it may be. He loves a certain thing. He can't see straight. You ever hear in English, you say, love is blind? That's it. He's tainted. So when you're going to try to present him the truth, he has a gold watch in his pocket. The ta'ava, whatever the ta'ava is. Until he takes the ta'ava out of his pocket, he won't be able to have emunah. The emunah is going to be compromised. I once, when I was young, I used to argue with my friends. They were a little less religious. And I used to believe that my arguments were very sound, logical. And my friends were smart, but they couldn't get the arguments. They would fight back, and it was so frustrating. I'm telling you, logic, they can't see, they can't hear. How could you be so deaf to what I'm saying? I got so frustrated, I went to Rabbi Miller, Rabbi Victor Miller, Alav Shalom, used to be the neighbor of the synagogue, on one of his walks. And I asked, Rabbi, what's going on with these people? I'm talking to them. He laughed. He said, you're talking to them from here, he pointed to his brain, and they're answering you from here, and he pointed to his heart. Which means you're giving them an intellectual argument, but for them to accept the intellectual argument, they have to put one of their ta'avot on the side. And they're not willing to put their ta'avot, because they want to go to the beach on Shabbat. Finish. They're bribed. They want to go to the beach on Shabbat. So you could bring them proofs, you could show them pictures, you could show them a testimony. Not interesting. They already are bribed with their ta'avot. So until they're willing to take all the bribes out of their pocket, the ta'avot, they're not going to see it straight. That means ta'ava, ta'avot of olam hazeh, cause a person's emunah to be compromised. Just like a judge is bribed by a gold watch, we are bribed by our desires. And therefore, he said, whenever you argue with somebody, it's got to be brain to brain. But if you're arguing brain to heart, it's on different planes. You can't win such an argument. It's only frustrating. You know, when a Republican argues with a Democrat, for example, Lavdil, they're talking about politics now, and the Republican gets frustrated because he sees certain things a certain way, and he's speaking, you know, what he believes is the emet, and the Democrat doesn't hear it. And the Republican walks away all frustrated. He can't understand why. A visible reason. Because the Democrat already, they put in his pocket welfare and food stamps and entitlements and HUD. And I'm not saying who's right or wrong. But automatically, you'll never be able to talk to him objectively because already for him to agree to you, he's gotta give up all these gifts. And he's not willing to. So the Democrats were smart. They bribed everybody. Now, automatically you'll see it our way. You'll see, whether it's right or wrong, but you'll see it in our way because you got a bribe. So this is a concentrated effort by politicians to bribe their constituents. Once they're bribed, they can only see it one way. They lose the objectivity. And for good reason they lose it. If I were to ask you, which came first? Hitler's Mein Kampf or his hatred for Jews? Which is just two ways of looking. I could say Hitler was an objective guy. And he wanted to write a book. And he wrote the book based on his understanding. And as a result of his book, he said, well, the consequence of this book, if it's true, is I have to hate Jews. So it was the philosophy that brought him to hatred of Jews. That's not what happened, Rabbi. He started off hating Jews. Now he has to create his whole perspective built on that. So when he writes Mein Kampf, it's through the eyes of a hater. He was bribed already, which means he was bribed already. Love is blind, hatred is blind. So therefore, it's not that he was an objective guy and he wrote this genius concept on a clear head. He wrote it already when he was checkered. He wrote it already when he was... So therefore, it's the... Rabbi Dessler says it. He says a lot of times... It's not the philosophy that comes first. It's the ta'ava that comes first. And then the philosophy is to justify the ta'ava. Now you got... Without the details of it. I'm saying,
those who read it, it was brought the philosophy then, the hatred, but it's lacked.
Hitler, when he wrote it, he wrote it already where he was a hater.
And other than him lying it, then once he published, but then it got out. That's a book.
Neither here or there. I'm talking about what he did. Now, that's Rabbi Dessler's rule. Now, you guys are, you know, adults, I can tell you this. One of the evolutionists, you'll probably know his name. His name slips me, and it doesn't bother me that it slips me because it's Shemesh Amir Kab. He doesn't deserve to be mentioned. He said it black and white. I read it in one of the books. He said, you think that the evolutionists, that they sat down objectively and they started, you know, we want to see objectively how the world came about? He said, that's not how it started. He writes, he says, in the 60s, in the 50s, in the modern science, and you forgive me for this gross language, but this is what he writes. He says, we were looking for sexual liberation. Pirush, I know you guys are tzaddikim, you know what that means. Pirush, we were looking to be free. We were looking just to be animals. We don't want to be limited ethically and morally. Problem was, if there's God, then it. So we started with the ta'bah. Now we need to build a hashkafa that'll explain the ta'bah. He says, it didn't start off well. We're going in clean. Whatever the conclusion is, we accept. And we concluded evolution. Well, once you conclude evolution, there's no God, so you can be an animal. No, it started off, we want to be an animal. We started off with the gold watch in the pocket. Now we had to create the hashkafa to justify the ta'ava. You understand? In America, they say you see what you want to see and you hear what you want to hear. They saw life through evolution because that's what they wanted to see. I never forget. I was with one of my friends in the yeshiva. We were arguing on a halakha. I even remember the halakha. Kadur mukseh b'shabbat. Does it apply today? Doesn't it apply today? Back and forth arguing. Shinhet. We were young. There was a big rabbi coming from Israel, Rabbi Pinhasi. We said, you know, we're going to ask the rabbi. Whatever the rabbi says, we're more there to his... We took the rabbi in the room. We said, Acham, we're learning the sugya of Kadur Mukseh b'Shabbat. Does it apply to a modern day basketball? He said whatever he said. I mean, the whole meeting was not more than 3 minutes. Me and my friend walk out, both smiling, and we look at each other simultaneously and we say, I told you so. I know you told me so. What did you hear him say? He said, Mutar. Mutar! He said, Asur! We both went in. As a classic case, we both sat down, the rabbi spoke clear, and we all heard it. The right thing for us to do in that case would have been to take a third guy who has no... you ask the rabbi, you tell us what he says. Which means it's possible that when you're subjective to one opinion, somebody can be telling you the exact opposite, but you don't hear it. And the same thing is in life. So the evolutionist, he starts off, we have ta'avot. We want to be ba'alei ta'avot. So they're going to see the whole world through a godless world, because it's easier for them to justify their ta'avot if there's no God. Once there's God, there's a conscience. Once there's God, there's guilt. Pasuk, boys. V'lo taturu aharei lebabchem v'aharei einichem. Pasuk in the Kiryat Shema, we're going to say in a few minutes. Do not go after your heart, and don't go after your eyes. The Gemara says, it's backwards. What comes first? First you see it, and then you crave it. That's the normal way. You see it in the street, your eyes get excited, and then the heart craves it. But the Pasuk says, it's based on what we're saying is Emet. First you crave it. You have a desire for it, and that's why you see it. It starts with the craving. It starts with the desire. And therefore, what you see is based on your cravings. And therefore, if you have ta'avot in your heart, you're going to see the world through that prism. And you're not going to be able to see the truths of whatever the truths are. There was a guy in the Brisker Rav's yeshiva, whatever it was, the story with the Brisker Rav. Guy was a top guy in yeshiva. He left the yeshiva and he went off to derech. You know, he went into his ta'avot. Came back to the yeshiva and he started asking the Rav questions. Cynical questions against the Torah. What does this mean? What does that mean? What does it say? And the Rav heard all the questions. The Rav didn't say anything. The student left. So the Rav, the students tell the Rav, why don't you answer his questions? So the Brisker Rav said, I answer questions. I don't answer answers. These are answers to answer up why he's doing what he's doing. He's not asking questions. It's a deep, deep saying what he said. Which means, when he was in yeshiva, he didn't ask these questions, because it didn't bother him, these things. Now that he's outside doing ta'avot, the Torah is a problem to him. Because the Torah stands against these ta'avot. So what does he got to do? Destroy the Torah. So he's not asking questions. These are answers. Because the Torah is this and this and this, that allows me to do this. He says, I answer questions, I don't answer answers. What has to be? It's very hard to be intellectually honest if you're bribed. And there's so much bribes. You know, a guy that wants to be Mechalel Shabbat or eat out in non-kosher restaurants, he's bribed by that. He loves that lifestyle. He's got to go to the beach. He's got to go to the movies. He's got to go to gamble. So when the rabbi gets up and speaks, right away there's a defense. Ah, I know he's talking about that. Courage to your other. Why are you so angry? Why are you so negative? Because he can't see it straight. I brought an unbelievable proof to this. In this week's Parashah, it says, Vayavoa Palit. Some guy, Mr. Palit, he comes to Avram Abinu, who's interestingly in that pasuk, they call Avram Avri. Vayavoa Palit, Vayaged Avram Avri. And the Palit tells Avram that his nephew Lot is taken into captivity. And this guy's a Sadiq, this Palit. He came from who knows how far to do a chesed to Avram, to tell him that Lot's in trouble. Avram was very gratitude to Darabah, and he went out to war. The Gemara says, who's this Palit? Gemara says, it's Og. Og Melech HaBashan. He wasn't Bashan, he was Og. Why do they call him a Palit? He's a refugee. Refugee from where? He survived the flood. Incredible. He survived the flood outside the Teva. Everybody was on the Teva, huh? And this guy, Og, he tailgated. He held on the back of the fender of the Teva, huh? And he got saved. Now, you know what Og saw? Og saw something that even Noah didn't see. According to the tradition, there's no window on the Teva. Og had a perfect view of the destruction. He saw all the death and destruction. He saw that if you make sins, if you become perverted, if you become corrupt, God will destroy you and put the level of judgment. That means after the flood was over, there's only one eyewitness of the flood. Og. He's the guy that saw it with his own eyes. So, seeing is believing. If you ask me, there should be nobody greater tzaddik than Og. It should say, right after the flood, Noah went and he planted a vineyard, and Og became Avraham Avinu. Og became the promoter of monotheism and the promoter of the... But he doesn't. Og becomes just a regular... He becomes a zero. Og becomes a deadbeat, a bum. What happened to Og? There should have been nobody more religious than Og. You saw it with your own eyes. You saw the deen of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yesh deen, yesh dayan, yesh sachar tov, yesh onesh. Well, anyway, what does the Midrash say? What motivated him to go to Avraham Avinu? Very good. He heard also that besides Lot being Avraham's nephew, Avraham's married to the prettiest girl that ever lived. So he had an idea. Go draw Avraham Avinu into this war, and he'll take Sarah. That was Og's gold watch. He loved women. He couldn't get past it. And because he had a Yetzer Hara for woman, he couldn't see straight. With all that he saw and all that he witnessed, but it couldn't bring him to the truth. Because he said, if I believe in this truth, then I can't look at pretty women all day long. I can't do this ta'ava. So therefore, the ta'ava was there, and therefore the truth had to be now. He probably justified what he saw in a different way, convoluted it, like Hitler did, like revolutionists do. The ta'ava is there, and therefore all goes all different. He sees what he wants to see. And it's all because he has a ta'ava. So look how beautiful the pasuk is. In that pasuk, it calls Og the Palit, the survivor of the flood. And in that pasuk, it says he went to Avraham Ivri. And I ask the simple question, why in that pasuk is referred to Avraham as the Ivri? He stood on one side and everybody stood on the other side. What did he do in that pasuk that talks about his Ivri? The explanation, we want to compare Og to Avraham. Look at the difference between the two tzaddikim. One is the Palit, he saw it, but he couldn't live up to it. And the other one is the Ivri. We're comparing the Palit to the Ivri, and the difference is, one was bribed and one wasn't. Now let's go back to a Mishnah, Pirkei Avot, gentlemen, that talks about Avraham Avinu. You know the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, to be a student of Avraham Avinu, you need to have three traits. What are the three traits of Abotai? Ayin Tova, Ruach Nemucha, Nefesh Efela. Interesting. Nothing to do about Emunah, by the way. Unbelievable. The Mishnah says, Shelosha Midot Betamide Avraham Avinu. There's three traits in the of Avraham Avinu students. Ayin Tova have to be, have a good eye to people. Humble, Ruach Nemucha, and Nefesh Efela. Nefesh Efela means you have a, you're not so attracted to stuff, to physical stuff. Which is basically, Ayin Tova is jealousy, kin'ah. Ruach Nemucha is kavod. And Nefesh Efela is ta'avah. Rav Shlomo Hyman writes, where's Emunah in this Mishnah? Shouldn't it say if you want to be a student of Avraham, you got to have Emunah? Explanation is, in order to have Emunah, you have to have these three midot, otherwise you'll be blind. This is the prerequisite to Emunah. That means, when we give class, Emunah, forget about Emunah. First you have to have the midot. If you're going to be a Baal ta'avah, you're not going to see it, you're not going to hear it. If you're going to have ga'ava, you'll never come to the truth. Because you always have to be right. And especially if you were living a certain way for 20 years and somebody comes along and says you were wrong. I wasn't wrong, you're wrong. You gotta check your ego at the door. The Pasuk says the greatness of Avraham Avinu was he had a good midot. And because he had good midot, that brought him to Emunah. That's the secret over here, Rabotai. Avraham Avinu did chesed. His chesed shows you that he had ayin tovah. He gave all his money to others. He had no love of his money. His money meant nothing to him. He gave all his money away. And he was humble. He served his guests. The chesed of Avraham represents the three midot. And therefore, you know what the Pasuk in Tehillim is saying? Ledor vador agid imunatcha befi. I had emunah, and my emunah was generational. And you know where I got it from? Ki amarti olam chesed yibane. It came from the chesed. It came from the good midot. Because I divested myself of ayin ra'a, nefesh shefela, ruach nemucha. The Pasuk says that whenever Avraham traveled, ushne ne'arav imo, he always traveled with his na'ar. Na'ar is a shetevot. Nefesh shefela, ayin tova, ruach nemucha. Always with a na'ar. That means, boys, it's not emunah, it's about midot. If your midot are good, you'll come to emunah automatically. And that's why most people, even though there's an internal drive towards God, there's external proofs, but people don't see it. Because they want to go to the beach. Because they want to go to the movies. Because they want to go to Atlantic City. They want to roll dice, finish. So as long as you want to fool around and have a good time, it can be in front of your nose. You won't see, you'll just give another pirush to it. To be a student of Avraham, you have to have midut. And I think that's the maskil. The maskil over here is that, yes, I had emunah. But he's telling you, where did my emunah come from? Ki amarti olam chesed yibaneh. I had chesed, means I worked on my midot of ayin tova, ruach nemucha, nefesh shefela, and as a result of that, I saw everything clear. And that's the lesson tonight, Rabotai. The midot are the prerequisite to emunah. Otherwise, you won't see it. So don't lose these gifts that God gave us. Not evolution gave us nothing. God gave us these internal messages and external. Don't let the ta'avot dull it. Don't let the ta'avot blind us.